incident at the snare, when God communicates to Moshe and tells him to go back to Mitzrayim and to lead the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim. Alright, and Moshe argues up and back, Chazal say for 7 days, and finally he has no choice but to accept. So now he returns. Just want to mention one thing. Before we start with Pasuk Yitches, let's just turn back. Hold the place there, but let's go back to where he agrees to take up residence with Yisro. That's important. That goes back to Beis, in Perek Beis, Pasuk Chafalaf, Vayoel Moshe L'Hashem Esesa Ish. And Moshe agreed to dwell with the man. And he gave his daughter Tzipora to Moshe. So Rashi says, it quotes a medrash on the word, there's a medrash on Vayoel, because the word Vayoel is related to the word Olah, which means, Rashi says, Nishbalo, he swore to him, Shlo Yazuz min Midyan, Kiyim Bershuso, that he wouldn't leave from Midyan without his permission. Alright? Now, first of all, that should strike us as problematical. What's the problem here? What's the reason for this? What's the framework? What's the idea over here? Why would he do so?
Who cares whether why would he have to tell him that when he could leave?
Why would he be beholden to Yisrael in terms of one that he wouldn't leave from there without his permission? What's the basis for it? What's the reason for it? It doesn't seem to make any sense. So there must be a point over here. Okay? Now, if you go back to Dalud Yitches, so, Vayelech Moshe, Vayoshev al Yeser Chosno, and Moshe went and he returned to his father-in-law, Yisro. Vayomolo El Chana, he says, let me please go. V'yashuv alach ha'ashev Mitzrayim, and I'll return to my brothers who are in Mitzrayim. V'eraho dam chayim, and I'll see whether they're still alive. Vayomer Yisro Moshe, and Yisro said to Moshe, Lech l'shalom, go in peace. So Rashi says, Vayoshev al Yeser Chosno, Litol Rishus. And Rashi follows through on the previous Midrash. This was to receive permission. Sharei Nishbalov, because he had sworn to him that he wouldn't leave without his permission. So Rashi learns that now that he was charged with this mission, he had to receive permission from Yisro. So he went to receive permission from Yisro. Okay. Now let's just take that for granted. But what would you say is problematical about the pasuk? The question is, what struck me as being difficult, is that let's assume that he had to come up with some kind of a decent reason. In other words, whatever you take the shvua literally or don't take it literally, but basically you see that it was very important for Yisro that he be there. Yisro did not want him to leave. That's clear. So now he's picking up, he's going back to Mitzrayim, which is a dangerous place to be. You'd imagine he would try to come up with some good reason. He wants to go with his blessing. So, the reason that he gives just seems to be so lame, so unconvincing. It's very weak. It's a tshvach. Let me go back to Mitzrayim to see my brothers, to see if they're still alive. What kind of thing is this? What is Yisro supposed to understand by this? As opposed to what? That maybe they're dead? That's what you're going for. So what do you have to go back to find out? If you're just interested to know if they're still alive, you don't have to go back. They had ways of, there was, you know, caravans, there were messengers. It's very weak. The whole reason is very lame. On the other hand, the other side of the coin is, why did he have to invent a reason? Why didn't he tell them the truth? That's the most glaring aspect of the question. You didn't have to look, you don't have to search for a justification. Tell him what happened. Tell him about the snare. Tell him that God commanded him that he's going. That would have been even better. I'm not going because I want to leave. Personally, he doesn't want to leave, but he has no choice. God has commanded me to go, and I'm going on this important mission to save the Jewish people.
Did he keep all that information from the beginning? Did he keep it?
One second. Now, he obviously told them. You can deduce that Yisro knew about the situation of the Jews in Mitzrayim. Otherwise, the answer that he gave wouldn't make any sense. my brothers who are in Egypt. So you can deduce from this that he had told Yisrael about the situation in Mitzrayim, and that they were slaves, and so on. If that were the case, that Yisrael had all this background information, then the question is, why didn't he tell him, give him the truth? Now, there was no reason. Moshe was not instructed to keep this a secret. It wasn't going to be a secret. As soon as he got back to Mitzrayim, he told the elders, he told the Jews. There was no indication over here that he was supposed to keep it a secret. So the question is, as I said, there's two sides to the coin. A, the reason that he gives seems very weak and unconvincing, uncompelling. B, the reason that he should have given is the truth. He should have told Yisrael what happened, the snare and God's command, and that's why he's going back. And then, of course, Yisrael would have been in no position to say you can't go. As it was, Yisrael said, Lech v'shalom, fine. So it worked out. But that still doesn't explain what Moshe's reasoning was all about. Okay? That's the question. I don't think it's true that the only possible thing you could think of is perhaps Yisro would not have believed him, or Yisro didn't believe in prophecy. I don't believe that that's true. And we'll soon see, subsequently, that Yisro was a very high-level individual. He had given up all forms of idolatry. And subsequently, he converted to Judaism. Now, he certainly believed in God. He certainly believed in God. Otherwise, Moshe would have had nothing to do with him. Moshe would not have lived with him, nor would he have married his daughter. He was a Kohen Midyan. And they put him, in fact, in Nidui, in Cheram, because of the fact that he did not worship Avodah Zarah. So, I don't see any reason why we should assume he didn't believe. And if he didn't believe, then he certainly had tremendous respect for Moshe Rabbeinu as a great thinker. And if Moshe Rabbeinu would have conveyed to him the information, what had occurred, it would have made an impression on him. Later on, he accepts the whole Torah. So he certainly was a guy, an individual who had the potential to accept all these ideas. So now's the time to tell him. I don't think he would have thought he's crazy.
He accepted these things when other people accepted them.
He would not. No. He went to Moshe. He accepted it after that famous meeting we're going to discuss in a minute. He had a meeting with Moshe Rabbeinu after Yetzias Mitzrayim. That's in Parshas Yisro, which we're going to turn to right now. Four, if you take a look, there's no indication that God told him not to tell anybody about this mission. He was not instructed to keep it a secret. Now, if you want to say that that's the reason, then you should have some source for that. And certainly it wasn't a secret, because as soon as he gets to Mitzrayim, he tells people that God appeared to him. God wanted this to be known. God did not want it to be kept a secret, so why must it be kept a secret from Yisrael? Well, what's going to happen if Yisrael finds out? He's going to go and tell Paro. It's going to spoil the whole plan. I don't think so. So we read about the reunion. A tremendous reunion occurs between two people, Moshe and Yisrael. And Yisrael heard, Yisrael the Kohen Midyan, Chosein Moshe, all the attributes, father of Moshe, heard everything that God had done to Moshe and Israel, that God had taken the Jews out of Mitzrayim. Alright? So first he heard. He heard about everything. And Rashi says, Eis Kol Asher Asa. Kol Asher Asa, you see, the pasuk describes everything that God had done, which means it wasn't just the Exodus, but all the miracles that surrounded them in the desert, the man, the be'er, the well, the water supply, Uva Amalek, and the war against Amalek. But then it says, Ki Hotzi Ad Hashem, as Yisrael Min Yitzrayim. And you'll see this throughout the Pesukim, that the essence of what motivated Yisrael, the most important piece of information, was that God had taken them out of Egypt. So Rashi says, Zu Gedol Al Kulam. This was greater than everything else. Alright, so Yisrael takes Tzipora, right, the wife of Moshe, after she'd been sent away, and his two sons, Gershom and Eliezer, and so forth. Then it says, Vayavo Yisro, and Yisro came with the family to the Midbar, and then he sends him, in Pasuk Vav, he sends a messenger to Moshe. This is through a messenger, Rashi says, saying, I am your father-in-law Yisro, have come to you, your wife and two sons with her. Then Vayetze Moshe. So Moshe receives the message and he goes out towards his father-in-law, and he bowed down to him and he kissed him, and the men, they asked each other, how you doing? They renewed their friendship. Alright, they exchanged greetings, pleasantries. They went into the tent. What's the pshat? Sit down and talk. Now it's time to sit down and talk. Now, Vayasapir Moshe Lechosno. Now Moshe tells over the story. Eis kol asher asa Hashem leparo leMitzrayim. Again, everything. And Rashi says, Vayasapir Moshe Lechosno, that Moshe didn't just tell it over in a factual way. He told it over, he was very careful to tell it over in a way that would have the proper effect upon him, a proper impact upon him. Limshoch es libo, to draw his heart, lekarvo leTorah. So Moshe had a special purpose over here. He wasn't just recounting events, but he was trying to bring Yisro closer to Torah through the description of the events. All right, Eiskol Atla, everything that God had done to Paro and to Mitzrayim because of Yisrael. Eiskol Atla Hashem Etzar Samaderach, and he told them about all the travails, the difficulties that had occurred to them on the way. Rashi says Alayam, Amalek, everything that occurred. Vayatzile Maroshem, and God saved them. Okay. So what was you? Now we have. So Moshe describes everything that occurred: the 10 plagues, the Exodus, the Kriyas Yamsuf, everything that occurred. What's Yisro's reaction? Vayichad Yisrael. Yisro rejoiced. Al kol hatova asher asa Hashem liYisrael, for all the good that God had done to Yisrael. Asher itzilo miyad Mitzrayim. Again, the pasuk refers to two things. All the good is in one category. For all the good that God had done. And Rashi repeats, Tova Saman, Vabe'er, Vatorah. Right? Asher itzilo miyad Mitzrayim. V'al kulon, Rashi says, Asher itzilo miyad Mitzrayim. The most significant thing to him was that God had saved him from Mitzrayim. Ad achshav lo hoya eved yochol livroch Mitzrayim. Until now, a slave could not escape from Egypt. Shoyso aretz mesugeres. The land was completely closed, under complete tight control. V'ilu yatsu shishim ribo. And now you had hundreds of thousands had left. So Yisro is a great man. First of all, parenthetically, just from that, from Vayichad Yisro, you can see a person's greatness. It's very rare that a person experiences such joy as somebody else's good fortune that he's totally unrelated to. That itself puts him on a very, very high plane. Even among friends and even in your own circles, you rejoice when something, a close friend happens that you're happy too. But even there, it's always within a certain limit. I'm sorry? That what?
Misfortune also.
That what? It's different. A movie is when you identify. You have identification. But if you were to find that there's many oppressed nations today that have no shaykhs to you at all, and there are a lot of people are fighting for their independence and so forth, and if people succeed and they throw the oppressive government, you wouldn't rejoice because of all the good. I don't think you'd rejoice. So this is a very high level individual, especially if the recipients of the good happen to be the Jews. That's even it's a totally different category. Given the natural animosity that people have, you see, towards Israel today. For a while after the Holocaust, there was a certain amount of pity and guilt. So there was a different attitude, but that's faded away. And now, there's very few people, except for Jews, that rejoice for when something really good happens to Israel. Now, then let's look at the Pesukim. Vayomer Yisro. And Yisro said, Baruch Ad Hashem, Asher Hitzlescha Miyad Mitzrayim, Miyad Paro. Blessed is God, who saved you from the hands of Mitzrayim and the hands of Paro. Asher Hitzlescha Om, Mitachas Yad Mitzrayim. So Chazal say that he was the first one. Up until now, nobody had saw fit to bless God. Even though the Jews sang Shira, but that's different. They didn't bless God. So he blessed God. He was overcome with a sense of thanksgiving to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for something which didn't even happen to him. For the fact that he saved you. And again, take a look at Rashi. Asher Hitzlescham, because there's a lot of repetition. Miyad Mitzrayim. What's miyat Uma Kosha, a powerful nation? Umiyat Paro, Melech Kosha, a powerful king. He was grateful for every aspect of the nation, because sometimes you can have a powerful nation but a weak king, or vice versa. Here you had all the elements were so stacked up against the Jews.
But wait a second, wasn't he biased against Moshe?
Asher hitzlas ha'am mitachas yad Mitzrayim. Yeah, but it's the Am, the Am. It's the fact that Moshe was never even in danger in the first place. Moshe didn't have to go down there.
But since it was Moshe who was doing it, and Moshe was his son-in-law.
No. I don't think, this is way beyond the pride that a father-in-law would have in an accomplishment of the son-in-law. Way beyond. This is praise to God. It's because of what he did for the... He's overwhelmed by the phenomenon itself. It's not a personal achievement. And he's praising God. Now, Ati Adati, now I know, Ki Gadol Hashem Mikol HaElohim, that God is greater than all the gods. Which is a strange pasuk. Ki Vadavar Hashem Zadu Alayim. Okay? Because it's of the way. The Mefreshim indicate that the Mitzrayim were punished in the same way that they sought to harm the Jews. Up to now we understand his reaction. Now, Vayikach Yisrael Chosei Moshe Olu Zvachem Lelokim. He goes further. Now he brings an Ola, Karban Ola, Uzvachem Chazal Sei Shlomim. Two types of Karbanos. And Aaron and all the Zikni Yisrael came to eat bread with the father-in-law of Moshe before God. L'shnei Olokim. And Chazal say that you see from this that mikan shanene meisuda shetalmidei chacham masubim ba, that anyone who derives hana from a meal in which talmidei chacham are eating in, it's keilu nene miziv hashchina. It's as though he's deriving joy from the glow of the shchina. It's b'fnei Hashem. Now, the only thing I find strange, everything we can understand, his reaction, he was joyful, he praised God. But what was the purpose of the karban? The purpose of the Ola. Ola, kemashma, shikula kolo. That does not seem to fit and flow smoothly. What was the motivating factor behind the bringing of a karban, especially a karban Ola? Where do we see that there was any chiyuv to bring a karban? The Jews, for example, they responded with Shira. Okay, so Chazal said that they didn't bless God. There was no bracha. So Yisra was the first one to be Mavarech. Fine. But Shira and bracha seems to be the appropriate response. But Chazal don't criticize and say, until Yisra, nobody brought a Karban Ola. What was the purpose of the Karban Ola? How did that relate to the events which had occurred? Why did he bring a Karban Ola? Like this, that the response of bracha was proper and appropriate on an objective level. Any individual who heard this and was in the proper state of mind, his mind wasn't distorted and his emotions weren't distorted, should have had the same response of joy and praise. Karban was a personal thing for Yisrael. It goes back to the pasuk of Ati Yadati. Take a look at Rashi and Ati Yadati. Ata yadati, what do you mean, now I know? Now I know means that before I didn't know. It's the implication. Now I know. So what do you mean? Before you didn't believe in God. What do you know now that you didn't know before? So Rashi says, Makiro ha'isi. Makiro ha'isi misha'avar. L'sha'avar. I recognize God in the past. The achshav b'yosef. But now I recognize him even more. Now what does that mean? On the surface, that's difficult to understand. Either you believe, you're a believer, or you're not a believer. On the one hand, the pasuk is indicating that Yeshua was a mammon. He was a believer. If he's a believer, so then what do you mean, Ati Adati? Now I know. What did you first discover now that you didn't know before? Yeah, he wants to say that he learned more about God. He was a total mammon, but he didn't know everything about God. That would not be formulated that way. That wouldn't be makiro biyosa. It's makiro. My whole hakara. I say differently. I'm saying that there was a change in the quality of his hakara, of his recognition of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What you're saying is different, and it may even be true what you're saying. You see? But it goes beyond that. You know, I say like this. He was a mammon before, but it's similar to what Chazal say about Noach. He says he got onto the ark, yes, mipnei mehamabel. What does that mean, mipnei mehamabel? And when the he didn't get on until he felt the raindrops first coming down. So Chazal say that he was a mamon v'eino mamon. He believed, but it wasn't a complete conviction. So there is such a phenomenon, and I think everybody has to recognize that. There's different levels of amunah. And one is a person who has a conviction. But then a person can have a conviction, but he's not entirely convinced. There are certain areas of doubt. There's questions. It's not a reality for him. In other words, if he was a Avraham Avinu, it would not have been stated about Avraham Avinu, that name Meham Avil. He would have been on the Teva, on the Ark, way before the rains came down. Because there'd be no doubt in his mind that it's going to happen. Noach had doubts. But he was a Mormon. The fact that a person has doubts does not mean he can't be a Mormon. What's the pshat over here? It means that Yisrael was searching for the truth, and he believed in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He did have a belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But he still had doubts. He wasn't 100% convinced. And Moshe was aware of this, by the way. So you have to understand, Moshe was very, very important. The Torah alludes to this. There was a very important relationship. The Torah doesn't discuss too much about the private life of Moshe Rabbeinu, and certainly about things like friendships. But Yisro and Moshe had a very close relationship. It was like a friendship. I'll explain it in a second. I would say, what caused them to become a complete mamon right now? There must have been certain doubts that he had which pertained to God's justice in the world. That's a problem that bothers most people. The average person, what prevents him from being a total mamon is because he can't understand how God relates to the world. You have it in every generation. Sadek Harala, Rosh Vatovla, how could these things happen? The Holocaust in our times, but it's not just in our times. There were the Crusades. And it's not just the Jews necessarily, but people are troubled. And I would say that this was a major stumbling block for Yisrael. How could this be? And he was with what's the answer? If a person can't get over this question, so then basically, well, you see, really it's human might is what determines. So therefore he had a certain overestimation of human might. When he heard about what took place, you see all the different miracles, the one that made the greatest impact on him was he was like overawed by the power of the Mitzrayim. And those, they were the superpower of the time. And he couldn't believe that it's possible that they could be toppled and anybody could escape. This is what Moshe Rabbeinu told them. This all began back in Midian. Moshe Rabbeinu told them about the Jews, about the oppression, about the enslavement. And in his mind, that became a very, very big stumbling block, and Moshe was aware of it. But when he heard about, that's why he emphasizes, Melech Kasha, Uma Kasha, right?
The Musugaris.
No, not one guy could escape. And the whole nation just walks out of there. The way it happened, this is Hashkachas Hashem. This is Gilui Shechina. Not to mention, I've gone through the whole thing about why Kriyas Yamsuf was so special and nice. It just showed that everything he had thought, all of his ideas about human power and human might was all false and was also an illusion, all an illusion. And therefore, see, that's the essential of Avodah Zarah. The real Avodah Zarah that a person clings to is this overestimation of human power. The greatest obstacle between man and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is his overestimation of human might. Because a person deep down believes that I have to be in touch with the mighty. All the tefillos, by the way. Pesukah Dezimra, Al Tiftachu Ben Adim Ven Adam, do not put your faith in man, because people put their faith in man and human power. We see, and no matter how much we see, people are amazed when they're wrong. See, what? That's the whole idea of Melchamas Amalek. When Amalek triumphs, when the wicked triumph, so people lose their faith in God. If they can get away with it, you see, that's all that counts. You see, now it's a good thing for society that Gandhi and these gangsters are being put away. When they got away with everything and they're running free, people lose their faith in God. They say there's no God in the world. It's just human strength. Because how could it be that these people get away with murder and nobody stops them and they reign supreme? So where's God? So when that was a problem. When Yisrael heard about what had occurred over here, it effectuated a personal change in his whole life. His whole life changed. That's the idea of Ola. Ola means Kulo L'Shamayim. Kulo Kolol. It's all L'Shamayim. Before this, Yisro could not bring a Karban Ola. He couldn't live his life. He may have been an Eved of Hashem, but he couldn't be Kula Lashem, because to the extent that a person has doubts, he can't be a perfect servant of God. A person, all of your service and all of your mitzvos and everything are only valid insofar as they're rooted in the total emunah. You see what I'm saying? The foundation. But if you have doubts in the if the foundation is not strong, I'm not saying you don't get schar from your mitzvos, but it'll detract from your whole service of God. Your service of God will not bring about its desired effect, because it produces a certain perfection of bringing you closer to God through Ahavas Hashem. But since you have basic doubts about God or about God's justice and about God's existence, so then that's a tremendous impediment to your whole Avodas Hashem. Now he's Kulul Hashem. Now my doubts have been removed. He was in a state of joy. Joy for the Jews, and the personal. He has to bring an Ola. The Jews didn't have to bring an Ola. He had to bring an Ola. The Ola is a recognition that it's a whole new period in my life. I've rededicated myself to a whole new relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is based on Kulul Hashem. All my energy is now flowing towards God. All my doubts have been removed. And of course, once again, according to Rashi, you see, Yisrael is Moshiach. Moshe was successful. Moshe knew that the information that he would convey to Yisrael would have a tremendous effect upon him. So Yisrael was a great person. Now, who was responsible for this? Where did this whole thing begin? I told you before that there was a friendship, a very close relationship. I don't know if Moshe Rabbeinu had any other friends. The Torah doesn't talk about Moshe Rabbeinu having friends. And a man like Moshe is separated from society. But this seems to be the only friendship that he had. You see, it's more than just father-in-law. Because when the whole reunion is between Moshe and Yisrael. It doesn't mention about Moshe with his wife, with his children. It's just Moshe and Yisrael. And it says, Vayishtachu, he bowed down to him. That's respect. Vayishaklo, and he kissed him. Vayishlu ishtarei l'shalom. They exchanged greetings. They were friends. Where did this friendship begin? It began back in Midian when the girls came back and told Yisro wanted to know why they came back early, and they said, well, this Egyptian man, he chased away the shepherds, he saved us from the shepherds, v'gam dolo dolo lanu, and he also watered the sheep. Remember I told you we went over that, why did he water the sheep? That wasn't his job, he didn't have to do that. And we said because that showed an additional element that he not only restored the practical, in terms of justice, restored the practical loss that the girls had suffered, but he was aware of the fact that they had suffered a blow to their whole sense of self-esteem. So therefore he did an act of chesed for them, to do the water for them. So when Yisro heard about this, he recognized that Moshe Rabbeinu is a unique type of a person. He practices chesed and mishpat from a completely different perspective. So he says, V'ayo, lomaza zaptenes ish. How could you leave a male? He recognized from the start that Moshe Rabbeinu is a unique individual. That's why Vayoel Moshe. He implored Moshe. It wasn't. Let me tell you something else. And Vayoel Moshe l'Hashem v'Ish. He implored him to stay with him. And he gave his daughter Tzipporah. Why did he give his daughter Tzipporah to Moshe? Why did he do it? In this act, was he simply involved in making a shidduch for his daughter, or was there another element?
He part of the growth.
He was involved in there's a mitzvah like that. There's a mitzvah to marry your daughter to a Talmud Chacham. What's the mitzvah? Uvo Sidbuk. To cling to Talmud Chacham. When Yisro gave Tzipporah to Moshe, it was as much for himself as it was for Tzipporah. Why? Because he wanted to establish a permanent relationship with this man. And that's one of the ways, that's a mitzvah, by the way, to cling to Talmid HaChamim, to set up, to do business with them, or to marry your son to the Bas Talmid HaChamim, or to marry your daughter to a Talmid HaChamim, so that you'll have a chibur, you'll have a relationship with a Talmid HaChamim. That's the mitzvah of Avos Sidbar. I would say when Yisro gave Tzipporah, it wasn't just for Tzipporah, it was for a personal reason as well. He accepted Moshe Rabbeinu as his teacher. At that point, Moshe Rabbeinu became a chaver, and he became his Rebbe. And he began to teach him ideas. And that's why Nishbalo, you don't have to take it literally, that there was Nishbalo means that Moshe accepted upon himself an obligation not to abandon him. Until he had, without his permission, which means until he had, he recognized that Yisro was going through a transformation, that he was a great man, that he was capable of reaching the true ideas. So as a Rebbe, he had an obligation to stay with him until he had achieved the objective. Until God spoke to him and told him he had to go to Mitzrayim. Now there's only one thing left to explain. So why didn't he tell him the truth? Which expression, which says, "I'll ligin tar min zogin, when them MS daf min zogin." Anybody speak Yiddish here? He says, a lie you're not allowed to tell, and the truth you don't have to tell. You don't always have to tell the truth. Now, he didn't lie over here. The reason Moshe Rabbeinu knew Yisrael, and he knew that Yisrael was bothered to a great extent by the fact that the Jews were enslaved. And he also knew that if the Jews were redeemed in a miraculous kind of a way, the way God had told to him, that this would have a tremendous impact upon Yisrael, and he wanted to use this information in the way to derive the maximum benefit. And you see later on, Rashi says, Vayesaper, Moshe Lechosno, Limsho Cheslibo. He told it over in a way to really draw his heart, to affect his emotions. Now, had Moshe Rabbeinu told him in advance that there's a whole plan over here, and told him exactly what's going to happen, then it wouldn't have had the same effect. It would have been anticlimactic. The best thing was the way it happened. In other words, he played it down. He played it down. Because once you know, when he wanted Yisro to be in a complete state of suspense, here Moshe Rabbeinu is going off, and he's telling him it's a tough situation, I don't know what state the Jews are in, which is true, and what Jeff's saying is true. I don't know what state they're in, physically, spiritually, whether they're even a people at this stage of the game. I don't know anything. I'm just going to go down there and see what I can do. So Yisro consented because he recognized it's a matter of justice. But now he had aroused Yisro's curiosity. He left Yisro in a tremendous state of curiosity and suspense to follow up, to find out what's going to take place. And then he heard. When he heard, he ran forth. He wanted to hear. Then when he was told the information, it had a tremendous impact upon him. You see? But once you know in advance, once you're told in advance about the plan, then it's not that exciting to you anymore. It's not going to have the same emotional impact upon you. Do you understand?
So you see you're allowed to use all these...
What? You're like the Six-Day War. In other words, when you hear the situation, when you see a situation, like the Six-Day War, you weren't around at the time, but before the war, it looked... Those of us who remember the situation before, it looked, nobody knew how powerful Israel was and all their tactics, but they were surrounded. It looked like another Holocaust on three sides, and NASA was going to throw them into the sea. It looked, then they broke out, and it was a miracle. 6 days, the whole world was shaking, was quaking. Now, I'm not saying, but if you'd have known, if you'd have been taken on a tour, and you'd have heard all the contingency plans and so on and so forth, you still would have been impressed, but it wouldn't have been the same. It would not have had the same emotional impact upon you. Now, the fact is, if Yisro would have known in advance that God told him and everything, logically he should still have been impressed. You see, but it wouldn't have, because then already he would have lost that whole sense of suspense. All right, so maybe it's not as bad as I imagine. All right, there's a plan, and maybe the Egyptians aren't as strong as I imagine them to be. Once you know in advance that there is a plan, so then the actual unfolding of the event will not have the same impact upon you. Understand? If you would know, like for example, the unfolding, and you're Moshe Mashiach, when Mashiach comes, and you see the whole world, just recently, the breakdown of the communist empire, it's like an amazing, unbelievable thing, half for years and years. They're the most powerful force in the threat of nuclear destruction, and suddenly it's gone. And like in days, whole nations are toppled. It's amazing. But if you would know in advance what the plan was, so then the actual phenomenon itself, then you downplay it. Say, oh, it's not such a big deal. I mean, it's just that we didn't really see, to begin with, how weak it was. That's, I believe, why Moshe did not tell Yisro the plan. It would not have been good for him to know about the plan.
Why does he even psych you up?
Because if he doesn't know about the plan, so then he is in the same state. He's looking at the situation. What does he have to know about the plan for? He's looking at the situation, and in his mind, it's an impossible thing. And then when he hears, let it happen naturally, when he hears naturally what occurred, this is going to have its effect upon him. But to tell him in advance what the plan was would have been counterproductive. The basis for his emunah was his knowledge. He was a thinker. He was one who studied. It was based upon ideas. But even so, you know, he had doubts. He was a human being, and the impact of the nisim were very important for him. But it wasn't an emotional conversion. I don't mean to say that it was an emotional conversion. The experience itself cleared up some doubts, so it had an impact upon his emotions, and it cleared up some doubts. But then, in other words, the conviction that he formed was based upon his knowledge. It wasn't just an emotional. That was meaningless. Even if your approach is an intellectual approach, you have to realize you're dealing with people that are human beings that have emotions. So you try to get a person involved in a subject through some emotional attraction. But once he's involved in the subject, then the mind takes over. So Moshe wanted to get Yisro involved in the whole phenomenon. There was a certain emotional excitement. But once he was involved in the phenomenon, he studied all the ideas. That's the point. Now, had he known in advance what was going to take place, it would not have had the same significance to him anymore. He would have downplayed the whole thing. He may not even have come. All right, so I knew this was going to happen, whatever. Then how he would have justified it, how he would have rationalized it, it would not have had the same impact upon him, this expression. Miyad paro, miyad mitzrayim, asher tzotzo mitachas yad mitzrayim. He was in a state of amazement. Now Moshe didn't want to do anything that would dilute that state of amazement. He told in advance that this is not a real problem, that it's going to be solved. So then his mind is withdrawn from the thing. He's not thinking about it anymore. And then when it actually does happen, it doesn't have an effect upon him. I don't see it the same way. The thing is to let him see the events. You're troubled by a certain phenomenon, right? Now I'll let you see what happens. Let the events have their effect upon him. But that's only if you have not given him any advance indications, any advance notices. You see, like... I'm sorry?
Well, I see...
More than that. A person should be given the opportunity to hear about what happened, to experience the event, and to make the deductions from the event. That's it. He shouldn't have to be primed in advance. Priming him in advance is not good for him. It's not going to be good for him. It's not going to help him.
If that in itself won't help him,
and I think it'll detract. The best thing is you have your problem, you stay with that problem. If you can work it out on your own, and you don't need the event, fine. If you can't, when the event occurred, now I'll tell you what occurred. But if my plan is to inform you, I anticipate that certain great things are going to happen. For example, let's say with the war, and the Scuds against Israel, and so forth. Let's say I know, everybody's concerned and afraid. I know that they will throw a certain amount of scuds at Israel and nobody will be killed. And it's good. Now, if I know in advance that I tell you this, then when the actual thing happens, it won't have this appear to you to be so fantastic. Because how did I know about it?
It did happen.
I'm saying it has that effect upon you, right? Because for all intents and purposes, the appearance is, you know, people should have been hurt and people weren't hurt. But once you're telling me in advance, right? Once you're telling me in advance about what's going to be and what's not going to be, so then the actual event itself is not going to have the same effect upon me. That's what I'm saying. By Kriyas Yamsav, it says, Vayimin Barashem Moshe Avdo. It did produce Amunah. All the Rambam is saying is that it's not the ultimate level of Amunah. It's not an Amunah which removes any possibility of doubt. But for a Chacham, for Moshe Rabbeinu, we didn't have any doubt. You see? It means for the Am itself, to convince Am Yisrael, in a way that there's no doubt whatsoever, that's not sufficient. But it did have a tremendous impact upon them, for the very same reason. Because they saw the whole downfall of human might. The whole illusion of human might was dissolved. You understand? Okay.